this weekend off. But don't worry, you're in good hands. Here's your host for the next 4 hours, Lisa Dent, joined with her home experts, Jim Sullivan with Tate Enterprises and Mike Holmes with Creative Carpentry. Introducing your House Smarts crew for this morning right here on 720 WGN.
Help, I need somebody. Help.
I love this
not
show.
Just anybody.
I love it because people can call in and get help, because usually on Saturday morning, some people are just sitting at home watching HGTV or DIY, and you realize, okay, that's all been condensed in 30 minutes and it's really 6 months worth of work. And what's ironic to me is they make everything look so cheap, you know, like, oh, that only costs this much money. And then you try to price it out and it's like, no, it's not that.
Yeah, and then
price.
They come back for months to fix all the things that,
right, that they rush through.
Yeah. So Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry, nice to meet you this morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing well. And Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises, full service remodeling. Good to talk to you this morning.
Good morning to you, Lisa.
Jim said he watched the Sox game last night. Did you, Mike?
No, I was working, actually.
Jim broke from work to watch it, and now you regret it?
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, you know, business first.
Oh, my gosh. So what's your prediction? Do you think we're going to win three?
I don't know. I mean, I have to say I am a Cubs fan, but I can go Sox just to support. But the I feel like Houston is supposed to win two games, so I'm positive that Sox can get two at home.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm a Cubs fan too, but boy, when you have a Chicago team and a run like this, you've got to cheer them on. You've got to wear the black. What about you?
Yeah. You know, I'm one of those strange Rangers. I'm not a big sports guy. You know, I like doing sports. I'm more into fast things, cars and stuff like that. And I rather do it than play or watch it on TV. So I don't do a lot of shows. So.
Okay. Well, the Sox, we want in the World Series. That's what we want.
Yep.
So here's the deal. If you call these guys, it's just like Lou, and Lou Manfredini is here on House Smarts Radio, and he answers all your questions on 720 WGN. He's got the answers, and so does Mike and Jim. In fact, Lou has worked with Mike for how many years?
It's been a long time. It's between 18 and 20.
And Jim, you've been here forever too.
I think for me, it's been probably close to 12 or 13, if I'm not mistaken. And I've done his TV show as well.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
The House Smarts TV show.
Sure. Nice. Yeah. So the phone number is 312-981-7200. We also have a text line. It's sponsored. We need the first caller of the day, sponsored by bathfitter.com/Lou. That's who you should check out. But we'd love any of your questions. I was intrigued because I was listening to Lou's show a few weeks ago, and I was mentioning how many calls I heard on the air from New York and places around the states where WGN is obviously accessible. And you said sometimes there's just some different criteria for building or remodeling in different areas, right?
Yeah, everybody's got their own building codes and how they do things, and you know the climate will make difference on how things are done. So you have to be careful when you start going over the state lines on, you know, information you're giving people.
Yeah, even within Illinois, you can find here in Chicago, there are things we have to do in the suburbs of Chicago and in the city that you don't have to do in areas of southern Illinois. So it can vary quite a bit. It's kind of surprising, actually.
So you both do remodeling. What is the biggest mistake that people make when they, let's say, they hire you, Jim, and they're dead set on something, and you know that might not be the best option? Are you able to sway them, or do you just say, okay, I can do that, but?
I always feel like my job is to give the client what they want, but at the same time, I think they rely on, when you hire an expert, you also kind of rely on them as well to give you good advice. You don't necessarily need to sway them, but you need to explain to them, like, sometimes you'll get a client that wants, like, slate in their shower or something like that, and so you have to take some time to explain, okay, you can do slate. However, how are you on maintenance? Like, are you really good at ceiling tile? Like, do you want to do that every, you know, 3 to 4 weeks or whatever, you know, whatever it takes? And then you find out, no, I don't really want to do that. Like, well, then maybe slate isn't the best option for you. Maybe you'd be better off finding a product that looks like slate but doesn't have all the care required to have a slate, you know, fixture or
the best we can do is give them all the options and pros and cons to them. And then it's up to them to make the decision. I mean, obviously, if they want something, I'll put it in. Usually, if it's something I'm not real comfortable with, I'll put it in writing that, you know, this was their But you try to give them all the options, and most people are pretty open to it because they're not totally aware of everything. They'll see something on TV, like you're talking with the shows, and they'll put something in, makes it look so easy and so pretty and this and that, and it may not be the best option. So you just have to explain it to them.
Okay. If you need an explanation on something, give us a call. Join House Smarts Radio right now. They'll answer any question you have. And you know what? It's free advice. It's good advice. And it's professional advice. The number is 312-981-7200. The experts on House Smarts Radio today own the company store. Mike Holmes owns Creative Carpentry, and Jim Sullivan owns Tate Enterprises. Both do remodeling, and they're here to answer any of your questions. Or you can use the text line at 312-981-7200. My name is Lisa Dent. Lou Manfredini is out with his son. I think they're doing a father-son weekend with some other dads or something, which is really cool. Hey, Kathy is on the phone. Let's hit line one, Jack. And Kathy's got a question for you, basically the first caller of the day. And Kathy, I believe that it's hey Jack, will you hit line one for me? Poor guy's answering so many calls in there. Hey Kathy, how are you today?
Hi, good morning. I'm fine, thanks.
You're calling from Medina?
Yes.
And you got a question about a water heater?
Correct. I have a cabin in northern Wisconsin, and I need to replace the water heater, but the old one coming out is only 14 inches in diameter, and that's all the space that I have to put a new one in, so I can't find one that is that small. Do you have any suggestions?
Wow, that's really interesting. How many gallon hot water heater is it?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. I'm not sure.
You know what, Kathy?
All right.
I'm with you.
Her.
All right, let's go with a different question. How many people are showering a day? How about that?
Oh, you know what? It's a summer cabin, so yep. On the busiest day, maybe three people a day.
Okay. And do you know if it's electric or gas?
It's gas.
Okay. Have you ever considered a tankless hot water heater?
Yeah, I have, and that's part of one of the reasons I'm calling is to ask, would that be an option? I think that would be the easiest to get in and out of there, but I didn't know if that would work.
I'm a big fan. I don't know why it wouldn't.
You know, we close the place up every winter. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. No problem at all. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a great scenario for you.
Okay.
The little bit of things you do have to think about if you're going from a conventional hot water heater to a newer to a tankless hot water heater. Mike's laughing at me because
pointing.
I always make the mistake of calling it a hot water heater. It's just habit. But at any rate, I'm going to keep on it, Mike.
Yes,
just so you know,
and I'm going to keep on you.
If you make the transition, some things you have to consider is with a tankless hot water heater, you have to consider how many gallons per minute. So there's a little bit of calculation. So you do need to work with a plumber, take a look at how many fixtures you have, how many you're going to run at the same time, these sorts of things, just to make sure you get the right size unit for you.
Yeah, but that does make a lot of sense for the cabin.
Yeah, for sure.
You're not heating the water until you need it.
Yep.
Correct. And now when we close the place up for the winter, we drain everything out, you know, and put the antifreeze in the toilets and stuff. Would that be, would I be able to do that with the tankless?
Yeah, for sure. There's drains on the tankless, so you can drain everything out of there. That's not a problem at all. The antifreeze doesn't really get into the water supply side, so that's really not an issue. Like I said, for me, it's the perfect scenario for especially for a second home, although I have one in my own home as well, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely would go.
Great.
Thank you for calling this morning, Kathy.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.
Along those lines, I got questions too, guys, because I am selling my house. And of course, you know, the house went on the market last week, so now there's a little drip out of the hot water heater. I call it that too. Sorry. Sorry, Mike.
It's Mike's pet peeve.
Is it? I saw his finger going. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what
to say.
And I'm so used to it that I just forget that. Mike, it's Mike's thing, and he's absolutely right. It's just such a habit for me.
Everybody calls it that.
So, Mike, is it just a water heater then, or what?
It's a water heater.
Yeah,
you don't have to heat it if it's hot water.
Right? A water heater. Okay, so two things. The one in my basement, if it has a small drip, that means it needs to be replaced, right?
Yeah, this,
well, technically, yes. I mean, unless there's something else leaking, a fitting or something leaking. But, yeah, otherwise, how old is the tank?
Probably the house was remodeled in 2008, so probably.
13 years. Yeah. It's probably close.
Yeah.
Okay, it does appear to be too big to get out the door. Like, perhaps they put it in there before they framed out that room. Could that be possible?
Possible, but not likely.
Okay, okay. Likely. And it looks like it's fairly big. So what's the cost? I mean, what's... Give me a ballpark. I know, but what are we talking?
It's against my religion. I can't do that.
Are we talking 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000? I have no reference to know what this would cost.
My favorite answer is it'll definitely be under $1 million.
Okay. Thank you. That's comforting.
If you can find a hot water heater, that is.
Yeah. Oh, that's
or
right.
Or even a water heater.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Product availability. Yep. We're back to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what is cheaper? Is it the tankless or is it the tank?
Well, if you're going to sell the house, you probably want to. It's going to be the most cost effective to replace what you have with exactly the same thing.
Okay.
You might consider going with a higher. Again, I haven't seen this, but I'm going to assume it's not a high efficiency or fast recovery hot water water heater. So there may be some cost increments on that just in terms of venting, but will definitely cost less than putting in a tankless hot water heater if you have a standard one now, especially if you're going to sell.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't call a big box store. You call a plumber. Is that what I should do, or where do I go for this?
I would call a plumber.
Okay.
You know, the big box stores, they'll sell the product, and they have a list of people who can install it, but you don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was approached back when they had the other before Home Depot, Builder Square, they were trying to get contractors in. They really didn't pre-qualify these contractors, and they don't pay them enough to really do things the right way. So I kind of lean toward go to the plumber. That's his gig. He knows what he's doing, and then he'll put in what he will stand behind, and he'll warranty. Because he's worked with that product for a while.
Yeah, Mendel Plumbing and Heating. Those are the guys. Yeah. I've used them forever. Mendel's been awesome. So I figured that's who I should give a call to before it's the 3 a.m. Hey, I've got water in my basement call.
Yeah.
They've usually been around for a while.
So. Yeah.
And usually the slow drip suddenly turns into, whoa, that's a lot more water. And then suddenly it's an emergency.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll get on that today. I'll make sure I call and make an appointment for Monday. Okay. Let's go to line two, Jack. Let's go to the second caller of the day, House Smarts Radio. House Smarts Radio hat. You know about this, guys? It's sponsored by Cobblestone Remodeling. And whether you're remodeling or renovating your kitchen or bathroom, Cobblestone Remodeling's team of award-winning designers help you create your vision. Visit cobblestoneremodeling.com or call 773-661-0606. And that means caller number two, that's you. You are the second caller of the day, Denise. So we're sending you a Cobblestone hat. How are you?
Fantastic. I'd be better if these gentlemen might be able to help me answer a question. We just completed a full kitchen remodeling 2 months ago, and the stainless steel sink is starting to have pit marks, rust pit marks, and it's only on one side of the sink. It's a large farm-style sink. The contractor that did the construction work sent us to a store to purchase the faucet, the sink, door handles, and the contractor basically has said, we have to go back to the place we bought it from, but that it's typical that stainless steel sinks rust. I had one previously that was in there 11 years that never rusted. Do I have any recourse?
Well, I would certainly talk to whoever you purchased it from, but a question for you. You say it's a certain part of the sink. Is it an area that you maybe have a wire rack bottom for it or something that is transferring that rust? Or you like always put something right there?
There is a full wire rack that goes across the entire area of the sink on the bottom.
Okay.
But where the pit marks are, where you can see the rust coming through, is only on one side of the sink because it's a large farmhouse sink.
Mm-hmm.
The rack that is on the bottom has rubber things on the part that holds it up above the sink so it's not laying directly on the sink.
Mm-hmm.
And those are fine. Those are fully intact. There is no cuts in the rubber. Imperfections that I can see.
Yeah, because I've seen where it'll transfer from something else, and it's really not rusting the sink. It's just on top of it. But I would still contact the source because they may have had some issue with some of their stainless product coming in, and it's showing up on a few clients. So they may say, oh, we're aware of it, and they send you a new sink.
When I first initiated this, may I say the name of the sink? I'm not saying where I bought it from.
I don't know the rules around here, Denise.
Yeah, let's have it. I'm curious myself. Yeah.
It's a Frankie, F-R-A-N-K-E, and it was not an inexpensive sink.
Yep.
And like I say, it just looks like somebody had taken something and made, like, if you take a safety pin and you go, you know, all over, and only on that one side. Yeah.
That is so weird. Okay, Denise, hang on. I want to finish the conversation with you. And while we take this break and check the news, Jack will get your information so we can get that hat in the mail to you. So hang on. We are broadcasting from the PermaSeal Foundation Repair Studio. It's House Smarts Radio. I'm Lisa Denon for Lou Manfredini with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises on 720 WGN. So do you guys, do you remember when you were young and the job you do wasn't quite as hard on your body as what it is now?
I always say it's a young man's business.
It is.
It really is.
Yes.
I'm Lisa Dent in for Lou Manfredini. This is House Smarts Radio on 720 WGN. Thanks for listening. Now jump in. I have two experts in the studio because Lou's off for the weekend. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry. You can check him out at CC Remodeler at, is it yahoomail.com?
It's CC Remodelers at ymail.com.
Okay. Because
not G, Ymail.
If you had a Yahoo account, I was going to make you change it right now.
Well, I think that is a form. I've had that for decades. I think it is a form of Yahoo, but
okay.
But everybody wants to put Gmail in there.
Yeah, exactly. And Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises, full service remodeling. How do people find you?
I'm at www.tateent.com. Email is jim@tateent.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joanne is on the phone. Jack, let's jump over to line three. And anybody else listening, you got a question for these experts? 312-981-7200. Thank you for hanging on, Joanne. How are you this morning?
I'm good.
Good. So what's your question for these guys?
I just bought a humidifier, and I have an air purifier in the same room. Can I run both of them side by side?
I don't see a reason why you couldn't, except for if your load's too much and blows the circuit. But it shouldn't be a problem with the two of them running together.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Well, that's my problem is space and circuits. So you think it would overload the circuit?
Do you have a breaker panel or is it a fuse panel? Do you have to screw in the fuses or do you have the little switches in your main panel?
I don't know. I'm in a condo for a couple years.
Oh, okay. Probably have breakers. And I mean, the worst case is it's probably just going to trip your breaker and you'll have to reset it. But that would be the only case I would see is the load. If you can get them to, even if you get them to two different outlets in one room, they might be on the same circuit anyway. But plug them in, turn them both on, and see what happens. If it blows the circuit, then you just got to go to your fuse panel there and turn the breaker off and then back on again.
Yeah, and then relocate one of them so it's not in a different room.
Yeah, that's my problem is space and outlets.
Yeah.
And I do want them both in the bedroom.
Can you tell me one thing? On the outlet itself, you have the two little prong openings.
Right.
Is one of them shaped like a T? So one's a slot and one looks like a little T?
Let me go look.
Because if that's the case, it's a 20-amp circuit, and you'll probably be fine then. If it's a 15-amp, you might blow it.
I love being around guys like you because I would be like Joanne, like, I don't know. I need to go look. I'm not sure what I have.
Well, a lot of people don't think of that or don't look at it that way. But if you have an outlet that has a T as one of the slots that designates it as a 20-amp circuit.
Okay.
Or should be, you know, if everybody did their job right.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Yeah. This is House Smarts Radio and 720 WGN. Get your calls in now. These guys will answer any question you have. And later on this morning, we're going to have a landscaper on that can get you ready for fall. Because in spring, you're all excited. You're planting. There's going to be growth. Fall, you're like, okay, I got a lot of work to do. So we'll talk about that later in the show. Joanne, have you determined what you have yet?
Well, what's in the outlet is one of those dingy things that you put in where you can have 1, 2, 3, 4 outlets.
Yeah, so, yeah, just an extension on there, yeah. But when you take that out of the plug, okay, the actual plug on the wall, not anything after that, is that okay. Two slots or a slot and a T?
There's two slots and then a little round thing.
Okay, that's your ground. So there's one of them doesn't have a little T shape to it.
T?
T.
T as in Tom.
Yes.
No, I don't.
Okay, they're just two regular slots. So that's a 15 amp circuit. Well, it may work. The only thing you can do is plug them both in, turn them both on high, and see if it blows the circuit. If it does, like you said, turn it off and turn it back on, and you're going to have to find another source for one of those.
I know.
Let me ask you another question. I already took one back because it said it covered up to 2,300 square feet.
Yeah.
My condo is only 1,072.
Mm-hmm.
Could I have kept that one, being that it was big? I took it back for a smaller one.
Technically, the bigger one's going to be better because it's not going to work as hard. If you have one that covers 800 square feet and you have 1,000 square feet, it's going to be working all the time. It's a little harder on the unit. I always say, even like with AC units and stuff, it's better to go a little larger than a little smaller. The thing that you need to be looking at is the amperage that, these need to work on 15 amps. If it says a 20 amp and you don't have 20 amps there, when that motor takes or turns on and has a load on it, it might trip your circuit.
All right. Well, I bought one that covers up to 1,200 square feet, but mm-hmm. I really liked the one that covered 2,300.
It's hard to say. We don't have all the information. I don't know the amperage of the circuit that you're dealing with or the units that you have. But the best I can say is plug them in, turn them both on full, and see if it trips anything.
Thank you so much for calling, Joanne. We appreciate it. We hope that helps a little bit.
Yep, it does. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Have a good day.
312-981-7200. You can call or you can text. Jack will check out the text line and see what kind of questions you have. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry is in the studio. Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. Both of them can answer any of your questions about whether you want to remodel your bedroom, your bathroom, windows. What is the number one thing people call you for, Jim?
I mostly do custom renovations. So
okay.
This and it's kind of funny. Our business is like cyclical. So sometimes you'll like do kitchens for a year, and that's all you do are kitchens. And then the next year you might do 20 bathrooms, and that's all you do for the year are 20 bathrooms. Yep. It's very strange how it works like this. But mostly this year it's been a lot of kitchens.
Okay, your questions will be answered today. 312-981-7200. This is House Smarts Radio. We're broadcasting from the PermaSeal Foundation Repair Studio. I'm Lisa Dent. In for Lou Manfredini. He's got some family time this weekend, and we've got two of his favorite experts in to answer all of your questions at 312-981-7200. You guys even looked at me like, wait, that's not the number, Lisa.
I was going to say, I've heard this number a long time. I don't remember a 7 there. Wait a minute.
Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. Both can answer any of your questions on the text line, or of course, you can call us. It's a big weekend in Chicago because not only are the Sox coming home to play on Sunday, 40,000 people, it's a sellout. But people from 100 countries are in town for the Chicago Marathon. That's what all the road closures are about.
Thank you. I did not know.
When you come into the city, you're like, what is with all the blockades?
Right, right. I want to go that way. Why won't you let me go that way?
That's what it is, yeah. 35,000 runners, over 35,000 tomorrow morning. And I was filling in for John Williams this week, and I had a guy call in, Rich Zappin. He's 65 years old. He's from Elmhurst, and he's running the Chicago Marathon for the 41st time.
God
bless him.
Isn't that
stunning?
Yeah.
And then he's getting on a plane Sunday afternoon, flying to Boston and running the Boston Marathon on Monday. And he's 65 years old. I'm blown away by that. I just don't know how your body can withstand that. And then I saw in the paper there's a guy named Mike Mendoza, who's a Marine, who's doing that. And then Aaron Pike, who races in a wheelchair, is also doing that. So you have people, for the first time, the Boston Marathon is backed up to our marathon, and people just want to challenge themselves.
One of our colleagues, I don't know if he's running this time, Don Ventura, he runs that a lot, him and Sonia. I don't know if they're doing it this year, but Don's not a young trooper anymore either, so I'm impressed when he does that kind of stuff.
Did they do the marathon last year in Chicago?
They did not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back in 2019, we had over 45,000 runners, and then, of course, there was no 2020 marathon.
Yeah.
And so this year, everybody is back. If you would have tried to get a hotel in the city this weekend, you would have had zero luck.
Yeah.
Because when you've got people from 100 countries.
Yeah. I got to think not having it last year makes it even that much harder this year, right? Because you just haven't had, I mean, I'm sure they still train and everything, but it's the competition and, you know, all that other stuff that goes along, and some for a lot of people travel as well, you know.
And a lot of new things are in place that kind of disrupt the normal pattern.
Right. Yeah. Everybody has to show their COVID, you know, that they've been vaccinated or they've been tested. And so, yeah, it's going to be something. I think NBC starts carrying it tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock if you want to watch. Ron is on the phone. Let's go to line one. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry here. Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. I'm Lisa Dent. Lou's got the weekend off. And Ron, thank you for calling House Smarts Radio. What's your question for the guys?
Well, my question is, how do you go about finding honest people to work at your house? To do, we had a room addition put on. It was actually a up and downstairs room put on, and spent some time back. And but it was just terrible. They did the work, and then they and my wife. Well, we kind of paid them a little bit ahead of time. We're trying to pay them for each section that they did. And but it ended up they ended up just not finishing it, and we ended up having to pay someone else to come in. Although they did have a bond up, it still wasn't enough to cover our losses in that deal. So that was my question.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. It is disappointing. And of course, you know, you don't have to watch TV very long on all the investigative reports to see there's a lot of bad contractors out there, unfortunately, and it gives guys like Mike and I grief as well. But my best recommendation is I feel like unbiased opinions are your best bet, right? So friends that have done some renovations, you know, who can refer somebody. I also like professional recommendations. So like if you have a plumber that you work with or that has been to your house and you liked them, maybe ask them if they know a contractor that they work with as well. Because a lot of signs of a bad contractor also happen on the subcontractor side as well. So a plumber who, you know, has done a job for a contractor, and maybe the contractor was really slow to pay, or maybe they didn't pay him at all, or maybe they, maybe they told them, look, I know you bid it at $5,000, but I'm only going to pay you $4,000, you know. All those kinds of signs are, you know, usually pretty good indicators that the plumber or those other subcontractors don't want to work for them anymore either. Yeah. So those are my best recommendations. So professional recommendations as well as referrals from friends.
I'd also look into places like NARI, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, because members of that association have to meet certain criteria. And if you have a problem with a contractor that's a NARI contractor, they will step in and try to work with both the contractor and the homeowner to resolve the issues. And it usually works out pretty well. So at least you have another person in the loop there. So I think all of those things are important. Make sure they're fully insured, workman's comp and liability, because those can come back to bite you if they don't have those things also.
That's also scary, because if you don't check on that and somebody gets hurt in your house,
yes,
that's on you, right?
Yes, and that, a lot of people don't realize that. If they do not have workman's comp and they have a guy working there and he falls off a ladder on your property, he can come after your homeowner's insurance.
Amazing. Thank you so much for calling, Ron. Thank you, and I'm so sorry you had to endure that. That's just a brutal thing.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day. It's House Smarts Radio. The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's 7:10. Good morning. I'm Lisa Dent. This is House Smarts Radio. Lou has the weekend off. We've got two experts in the studio this morning, Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. Both were surprised to hit roadblocks coming into the station today because Chicago Marathon gets underway tomorrow morning. Either of you guys runners?
Only if someone's chasing me.
We've got phone calls coming in and text messages. We're going to get to your questions. And if you want to get on the list or get in the queue, 312-981-7200. Let's hit line one, Jack. Jerry is on line one, and he's got a question for you guys. And I think it's just this time of year that everybody's got questions about decking. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you, Lisa.
So what's your question for these guys?
Well, Mike and Jim, I'm thinking of flipping the boards on my deck. My deck wood is 30 years old, but I don't have any rot on them, and I go under the deck a couple of times a year to sweep out and stuff. It looks like the boards are good underneath. I do realize that the end grains would be in the wrong direction, but is there a special tool to remove them screws?
Wow, that is. Here, let me get the microphone, the right mic on for you. There you go.
Oh, sorry. Why do you want to flip the boards?
Because it's pretty expensive to replace them.
But I mean, why not just clean it? I mean, if they're in good shape, because you realize a couple things when you flip it, they're going to look different because they've been in contact with the joists. So you're going to have like stripes across the boards every 16 inches, kind of thing. And and you're going to cup it the wrong way, which means water could sit in between in the center of the boards after a rain if it starts to cup.
Those are the grain rings.
Huh? Yeah. So really what I would try first is just use a deck cleaning product. I mean, if they're in good shape, they're just not looking as pretty, you know, dirty.
Right.
I would try that first. It's not that hard to do. It's a solution. You mix with water and kind of use a bristle broom and kind of sweep it on there and then clean them off. I would try that first because that's a lot of work at what you're doing.
Yeah.
So it's not a paint remover, is it? It's not a paint remover?
No, it's deck cleaning. I'm assuming this is a raw treated lumber. It's not painted or stained or anything, right?
No, it is. For many years, I stained it every so many years.
Okay.
Then it couldn't take the stain anymore, so I went to a solid color stain, so it looks like paint.
Okay. All right. Then I see what you're getting at.
Why not do exactly what Mike said?
Yeah.
Add a power wash in there as well,
yeah.
And then a light sand and just a recoat of finish over the top.
Yeah, another solid stain or something.
Like a floor sander, you mean?
You don't need a floor sander. No. You can a palm sander is fine. You could use a pole sander. All you're trying to do is just open up the grain on the top of the wood so that it will absorb the stain.
Yeah, you're not sanding it down to clean wood.
Sanding
you're
it down.
Just kind of roughing up the finish a little bit.
Oh, okay, good.
So you don't have to like really muscle down on it. But if you use the power washer first, as long as you don't get too much power and start tearing up the wood, you can clean off all the debris and any loose material, and then I would do the cleaning product, clean it, and then you can do a light sanding over it and then retop it with another coat of your solid stain or a wood like a deck paint.
Good luck with that, Jerry.
I'll try that.
Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you.
It's House Smarts Radio. Lou has the weekend off. I'm Lisa. You're listening to Mike Holmes and Jim Sullivan. And Mary's on the line. She's got a question about outside painting, which seems to be the time of year that everybody starts thinking about that. We'll take her question and yours coming up next on 720 WGN. I'm Lisa Dent. Lou has the weekend off in studio today on 720 WGN is Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. We got a question on the text line from 815. It said, we have an old farmhouse. The basement has a brick floor. How can that be sealed to stop moisture from coming up through the ground? What do you think, guys?
Well, first off, I love the idea. I mean, a brick floor in a basement sounds really cool. However, I also would expect that you would have a lot of moisture problems.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it goes.
What they did, too, I've never seen a brick floor in a
basement. That's what I'm saying. Like, it sounds cool.
The only thing I could think of is that you're going to have to pour concrete into the flooring.
I would think so, also. I would think you'd probably have to put down a plastic vapor barrier first.
Yeah, do all of the typical to do a concrete floor.
Yeah, I was
maybe
thinking,
even remove the brick so you have that extra thickness to get, because if you raise too much, you might affect some of your other tributes in the basement there.
Yeah, I was thinking about like even like a permaseal. If you put in like a drainage system around the perimeter of the house, it'll probably help. But bottom line is that the brick are going to be porous and they're going to suck up moisture from the ground, even if you collect it around the foundation. So.
And it's an old brick it's an old farmhouse, so you know whoever built it did it by hand and probably was a great bricklayer and thought, this will be the perfect solution.
Well,
I can do
this. That's the thing. I mean, that's a great point, Lisa, is that, you know, we all expect basements to be dry now. Like, and they can be, you know what I mean? Like, and it's legit. But the problem is that it wasn't that way when that house was built. I mean, I'm sure that that basement expected they were going to get water.
Have no drain tile.
Yeah, you would probably find the washer and dryer if they're in the basement. They're probably sitting up on pedestals 12 inches off the ground, and the furnace is 12 inches off the ground because they expected to get water because we didn't use those spaces like we use them today.
Right.
So it doesn't mean it can't be converted. It just means that it has to be brought to the level of detail that we do now to make that watertight.
I had a leak in the basement wall, and forever I just ignored it, you know, until I put the house on the market. And the realtor's like, you have a finished basement. Just because it's in your utility room, you have to get it fixed. And I go, well, it's just a little leak when it rains a lot. And he's like, that doesn't sell. So I always perceived that it would be thousands and thousands of dollars, but it wasn't. They come out, they put those things in the wall. It's done in one day. It has rained like crazy, not a drop. And I thought, why didn't I do this years ago?
Yeah.
My last house, I had a small crack, and I use PermaSeal, and I recommend them to my clients. And they came in, and they patched it, and done. Never leaked again.
Yeah, it's so simple, but for some reason, as a homeowner, you think that is just too tough to do.
And it's not as expensive as people think.
Right, really that's what I thought.
Right, and it adds strength back to your foundation, because let's face it, if it's a crack, it means that the foundation, is not solid anymore, and so the epoxy glues all that back together and is just as strong as the concrete, so... Yeah.
Jack, let's go to line two. Mary has been waiting on the phone. Good morning, Mary. I know you wanted to talk to these guys about painting the outside of your house. What's your question?
Yes, it's about painting and tuck pointing. I have to have some painting done. I have a brick house, and I have to have painting done. I was wondering up to what temperatures. I'm trying to find a painter who will just do certain things. I need the front bay painted just on the outside. I have a porch that I need some stuff put around. I have some work. The porch and the trim on the garage are cedar, and I need to have that stained or something. Okay. How far in it, what temperature can I have it done?
Well, first thing I would say is find the contractor, because he's going to want to stand behind whatever he does. So he'll be comfortable with whatever temperatures he's going to want to paint at. So I would find the painter and the tuck pointer to let them decide, because they're going to warranty their work. They're not going to do it if they don't feel that it's going to bond correctly. The staining you can do a little colder than the paintings, because the painting is typically going to be done with a latex paint, water-based kind of thing. Staining, a lot of times you can, because you're using oils, you can stain a little colder weather. But I would talk to the contractor first. I always tell him, because, you know, the contractor is a guy who's got to take the call when it fails, so he's not going to do something that he doesn't think is going to work right.
So
I was just pointing. When we had that bad storm a couple of months ago that came sideways, I had water coming through my bathroom window framing inside.
Okay.
I had water pouring in, and I've been told to have that tuck pointed. Do I have to have the whole west outside wall in my house done?
A tuck pointer should be able to come in and just hit the areas that need to be done, but it also sounds like that could be a caulking around the window. problem. So if that's the case, the painter should be able to handle that, too.
Able to handle that, too.
Yeah. Just make sure you get a good contractor, Mary, okay?
Well, that's been the hard point, trying to find somebody. I've been asking neighbors. I've been looking in the telephone book. I don't have a computer. I don't know just who to contact.
Is this the number here that we...
If you hang on, Mary, we will take your phone number and we'll get that information. We'll make some suggestions for you, okay?
All right, thank you.
Can you take texts on your phone?
No.
Okay. Let me see if we can find something and we'll call you back on it.
Jack, go ahead, get her information, and we'll go to line one. That's Tim. Good morning, Tim. I understand that you're looking for a product to clean your floor. What kind of floor is it?
It's linoleum tile. You know, it needs a real deep cleaning. I'm renting an apartment in the Gold Coast. Do you understand what I mean? The basic linoleum tile.
If it's an older vinyl floor, you may not be able to really clean it because the older stuff used to yellow a lot more. And that's just in there now. It's impregnated into the tile.
Yeah.
So if it's real yellow.
I can go with the. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. If it's real yellow, though, there's probably not a lot you can do about it.
No, it's not really yellow. It just has a lot of dirt on it.
Okay. Just good old fashioned elbow grease, you know, a scrub brush.
I'll go to Ace Hardware and see what they have.
Yeah, just tell them what you're looking to do. They'll guide you the right way.
Yeah, can I ask one more quick question? Is there a company that would like clean my heating vents? I'd obviously have to pay for it myself, but
I don't have anybody I can recommend.
Gas heat on the walls.
Yeah. I mean, there's companies out there. I don't have one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But duct cleaning. Yeah, just look up duct cleaning on your HVAC duct cleaning on the computer, and you should be able to find some people in the area.
Yeah, and talk to other people in your building, too, because I'm sure that they've used people that they might suggest.
Mm-hmm. Or your furnace.
It's subsidized housing, you know, from the government, so building needs a lot of work, but it's only so much that can be done.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. Thank you so much. New to Lou is coming up in a bit. We're going to turn you on to a new product. Lindsay's going to take care of that. I'm Lisa Dent in for Lou Manfredini. It's House Smarts Radio. The number is 312-981-7200. Here's a question from 847, guys. I'm building a new ranch home with 10-foot ceilings and 2x6 exterior walls, and there are a lot of recessed can lights in the ceiling. Are there new light fixtures out there that do not require a large housing box and are more economical without losing heat? That's from Dave.
Yes, and there's lots of options there. The can light itself should be, Mike and I were talking, should be an insulated can, so it shouldn't be losing a lot of heat, and it can be insulated over the top of it. But the question is, are there newer lights that are available? And the answer to that is yes as well. We've been using a lot of LED discs, which are very, very small, very thin, not even the thickness of the drywall. And you can insulate over the top of them and so on. And, they're great. I mostly use them because in kitchen remodels, you have a lot more flexibility as to where you can put them. You don't have to be concerned about joist locations and all these things. So there's a lot of new technology out there, particularly in LEDs, that are a lot more energy efficient than what there used to be.
And they do a lot more than just light now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just a lot of effects. You can put them under your phones, mm-hmm. all
yes.
kinds of things.
And if you're building a new home, should you invest in smart lighting where you can tell Alexa or you can tell your phone to turn your lights on, or is that a waste of time?
I'm...
You're old school.
Well, you know, I have clients who love it. They do everything off their phone. But, you know, with everybody can be invaded that way. You know, you get too much technology. I worry that if you got cameras in your home and it's connected,
mm-hmm.
you know, it creeps me out sometimes. But it's neat that you can do all of that stuff, that you don't have to go into your house. You can turn on the lights before you get in, mm-hmm. make sure it's safe, that kind of stuff. It is nice that way.
Yeah, and with that, too, I find that most of these things are wireless. So, right, as long as you accommodate for enough access points and a large enough router that can handle all of the Wi-Fi devices within your home, you really shouldn't have any problem with like technology, especially if it's a wireless configuration.
Interesting, yeah. Because I was considering that and I didn't think about the whole Wi-Fi aspect. So.
Well, again, you get into some, again, every home is different, but you know, if you're in a brick home with masonry walls and thick plaster walls, you're going to have some lag issues and some Wi-Fi issues within the house. And so, again, there's ways to get around that with wired access points on each floor, which, again, in a larger home, you would want to consider that as well.
A few more questions coming up. It's House Smarts on 720 WGN. I'm Lisa Dent in for Lou. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry in the studio. Jim Sullivan ready to take your questions. Jack is in the producer's booth. Let's go to line three because Fred's been hanging on. He's the guy that's got a leaking roof. Good morning, Fred. How are you? It sounded, did you hear that? He like hit a button. And he dropped the call. That wasn't on our end. Fred, give us a buzz back. Let's go to line one. Bob is on the phone. Bob's got a 150-year-old house, and there's something with the cellar, right, Bob? What do you need to know?
Yeah, I have a 150-year-old house, and I don't have a basement. I have a stone cellar. And I don't have a lot of problem with water coming into it, but it gets musty, you know, because you can see if you look to the top where the stones stop and the floor joists start, you can see, you know, logs and the stones are open to the groundwater on the outside. So it gets kind of musty. Can permaseal or something like that, can they seal at those stones?
Yeah, how does that work, guys?
They do make sealer for stones and bricks and so on. Things that I'm thinking of when I hear you explain this, things I'm thinking of is what type of heating and cooling system do you have in the house? Like, is it an air movement problem? Like, maybe there's just not enough air moving to dry out the air, or maybe you need a dehumidifier to dry up air if there's moisture in the cellar already.
I run dehumidifiers in the summer months. I have a forced air furnace air conditioner down there.
And do you have supplies and returns down there?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. Well, you know, one thing you could try that's fairly simple is just put a stone sealer on the outside, and you probably put it on the inside too, I would imagine. You get one of those Hudson-type sprayers, you know, where you put chemical in, you pump it up, and you can spray. And I would just go around the foundation on the outside. If you can clear away a little soil around it, that would be even better. But at least spray that upper part. That'd help keep some of it off. But the ideal would be to get down lower. I'm not sure if PermaSeal does that or not. You can certainly call them. They'll tell you.
Okay. Well, you were talking about it a little while ago, and I decided to ask to see if you guys had any bright ideas. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Yep. I guess they aren't bright ideas, but we try.
Have a great day. Thank you so much for calling. It looks like Fred is back on line three. So his phone call did drop, but we'll go to Fred because I know he's been patient in waiting. Fred, thanks for calling back. You got a leaking roof. Is that the problem?
I think that's the problem. I came home yesterday, and there was a puddle of water near my garage door entrance. And it's coming from an interior wall, and on the other side of the wall, I have a shower, and in the wall, there's a vent pipe that runs up there. So I'm trying to figure out what the source of the water is.
Is this the garage overhead door?
No, this is an interior. So it's inside the house. It's by the door that comes in from the garage. The roof up there, it's a valley. I was up in the attic trying to look for a leak, but unfortunately the way the roof is pitched and I've got blown in insulation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of difficult to see if there's water coming in from the attic. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm just trying to eliminate other potential sources of what it might be and just assume it's the roof.
So I can tell you that, have you ever had water there before?
Not that I know of.
Okay. So finding a water leak is always a little bit difficult unless you have a gaping hole in your roof. Because where you see water isn't necessarily where the water is coming from. So it's always a little bit difficult. And I'm always a little hesitant to do a whole lot if it's never happened before. So if it were me, I would sort of start with the obvious things that don't require a ton of labor or time or calling in professionals. I would start by checking, like, make sure your gutters are clear. Make sure your downspouts are clear. Make sure there's nothing blocking any stormwater drainage that this house is supposed to have. And if I continue to see water after I know those things are checked off, then I would start, you know, looking at more difficult types of water investigation. Could be roofing. It also sounds like it could be the bathroom, especially on a one-off. Maybe somebody overflowed a shower drain or a tub drain or something like this, or a toilet. So, like I said, I would start with the obvious stuff, the stuff that, you know, is just normal maintenance on the house. Just check those off the list first before I start tearing walls open or crawling around the attic. Unlikely you're going to find a leak in your attic that's coming all the way down through the insulation, through the drywall. You would see a spot on the ceiling in the drywall before you see a spot on the floor.
Yeah, every time somebody showers, I check around and look and see if it seems wet. Not right when they start the shower, but maybe a half hour after they take the shower, because it's going to take its time to leak over there. But yeah, I agree. Take your time and kind of document what's going on. When is it leaking? You know, did somebody just use the shower or the toilet, or did we just have a rain? And kind of try to narrow it down that way.
Thank you for calling, Fred. We appreciate it. We're broadcasting live from the PermaSeal Foundation Repair Studio. This is House Smarts Radio.
You stand about 6'4".
The south side of Chicago is going to be electric on Sunday. 40,000 people on the south side for the Sox against the Astros. And boy, we're hoping for a win on this one, aren't we, guys? I don't care whether you're a Cubs fan or whatever. You just want the Sox to win.
I'm rooting for them.
Me too.
Time to take care of business at home.
This is House Smarts Radio. Lou has the weekend off. I'm Lisa Dent. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry in the studio. Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. They're so knowledgeable. They'll answer any of your questions. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Jack, let's go to line four. Kathy is on line four. And Kathy, you're daring to talk about snow already. Are you worried about snow?
Yes. I live in a townhouse, and I have a small roof that's above my doorway, and it gets an ice dam in the corner. And I want to know if there's anything I can do to help prevent it before it starts this winter.
Well, is it accessible from an attic to get into that corner?
I'm going to say no. I've never been in the attic, although I've been here 25 years.
Okay. I wouldn't go up there either.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
One option, have you ever looked into heating cables?
But I have no electricity outside, right? Don't I need that?
You would need electric run, an outlet either in the eave or down lower near the downspout. So that's one option. Of course, you know, there's lots of products out there now that you can put in the gutter that will, like salt products, that will keep it from icing up, which may be an option for you as well. I don't know if you'll find them in any stores yet.
The old trick, you can take salt pellets like you throw onto your driveway, put them into a cut off piece of pantyhose, knot it up and make like a tube of salt, and then you lay that up in that valley. As the snow, you know, comes, it melts it down. A little primitive, but it does work. The other thing is, if you can get a roofer out there to maybe pull up a little bit of the shingle there and get some ice and water shield, you know, underneath, and then relay the shingle, that will keep it from getting into the house.
What is that last thing? You put what in there?
It's called ice and water shield. It's like a rubber membrane. And what they do is they'll pull the shingle up, and then they bond this membrane down to your roof sheathing, the wood part of it, and then they shingle back over it, and that helps keep the water from coming through. It'll get past the shingle, but when it gets to the ice and water, it'll, you know, go back outside.
Yeah, it won't prevent ice damming, though.
It'll just keep the water from coming inside.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask one more question? What do you guys think about garage door insulation? Is it worth it?
Like as an aftermarket product that you would add to the garage door?
Yes, yes.
Do you use your garage for more than just parking your car?
Well, I would like to.
Okay.
Is it a steel garage door?
It's put on by the townhouse. It's white.
Yeah, it's probably a metal. Are you sure it's not insulated now?
I'm not sure.
So the easiest
way to figure out. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out how to make it just a touch warmer. So if I could do some projects in there, and I had talked to Lou last week and asked him if he thought that 2-inch foam board would help, and I called the manufacturer, and they said what really helps is a garage door insulation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's...
It depends on what kind of door you have. If you have a hollow steel door but it isn't insulated, there's not much you can do now. You would have to really replace the door itself. Mm-hmm. They do work. I mean, it does keep the temperature lower. One other thing that's a little simpler that might help, too, is just put in new weather stripping, because a lot of times people don't keep the weather stripping up on the doors, on the overhead door, and a lot of air can come through. You know, if you get in the wintertime little piles of snow inside your garage, you know that that weather stripping's got to be replaced.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks
for the call.
I hate talking about snow already.
Yeah. I know. How dare you, Kathy?
I'm sorry.
It's House Smarts Radio. Lou is on vacation. I'm Lisa. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry. Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises in the studio to answer your questions. Or if you don't have a chance to get on the phone, of course, you can text us and we'll answer some of those that have come through. The number is 312-981-7200. It's House Smarts Radio. We've got time for a quick text in question for Mike Holmes and Jim Sullivan. Hey, House Smarts, is there a place in the suburbs that will repair the latches you squeeze to move storm windows up and down? The springs on mine are shot and they don't spring back anymore. My windows keep falling as a result. Just want to fix it, not replace it, if possible. That's from Gary in Elmhurst.
Yes, there is a place in Franklin Park, Blaine's Service and Supply, and they sell all that kind of stuff and they repair it too. So I don't have their number handy, but I've been buying from them for years.
And what's the name of it again?
Blaine, B-L-A-I-N-E, Service and Supply.
Perfect. More of your questions answered as House Smarts Radio continues on 720 WGN. Okay, I like that kind of music, and I think maybe you do too, Mike, because I noticed when I just came back in the studio, you're wearing cowboy boots.
I've worn cowboy boots most of my life.
They're comfortable.
They are so comfortable. It's funny, the pair I'm wearing now are older than my wife's relationship. I don't want to say older than my wife, but I've had these boots longer than I've had her.
I'm like, wait, is she 20? Did you go young or what?
She's younger than me, and she's gorgeous.
Oh, good for you.
I've had these boots longer than her.
So that's Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry. These are the guys you want to reach out to if you need remodeling done, if you need an opinion. Tell people where they can find you, Mike.
Best way to call is 630-892-0720. The reason I hesitate is because I am swamped.
Yeah, Mike's hard to find. Mike's hard to get a hold of.
I apologize, but most of my work right now is my existing clients. I just keep going back to them, or they come back to me, I should say. I'm not saying that I don't want to take on new work, but I am booked pretty solid. Feel free to call, and if I got an opening, I'll try to help you out.
And Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises, do you have any?
It is busy out there. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But I, of course, phone is 630-986-0855, or you can see us on the web at tateent.com.
Can I tell you, I fell in love with both of them about 15 minutes ago when I found out they both built ramps for their dogs. That, to me, is a true dog lover. When your dog's getting old and they need help.
My two boys are my kids. I don't have children. I have my four-legged ones, and my wife and I would do anything for them. They're our heart and soul. So
I love that. Yeah. All right, Eloise. Let's go to Eloise. Sweet Eloise. She has been hanging on the phone since before we went to the news. Eloise, thank you for being so gracious. Thank you for hanging out with us. What's your question for the guys today?
Good morning. We bought a two-flat building, which also has a garden department, about 15 years ago. We completely gut rehabbed the building, but unfortunately, we did not consider sound insulation at that time. On the second floor, I have a 14-year-old grandson that plays the viola. Well, the tenant on the first floor is not very happy about the sound. So where I'm asking, what would you do about putting in sound insulation? I'm thinking between the floor and the ceiling.
So a couple of things I can recommend, and Lisa may have some experience of this also because she's built a studio in her house. So sound is a funny thing, right? So sound is more about absorbing sound than it is trying to stop sound from moving. So some of the things I might suggest is that maybe, did you say your grandson or son?
Grandson.
So maybe in the room where your grandson is practicing viola, you might consider putting some fabric in there to help absorb some of that sound so that it's not traveling and bouncing around as much as it would. But if you really want to do some insulation and some sound insulation, you can add blown-in insulation through the drywall of the space below. Obviously, you'd have to be in the tenant space, but they can do a blown-in cellulose or something along those lines, and that will add some sound dampening as well. But I would start by, like, purchasing some moving blankets or these kinds of things that will just help absorb sound, and they'll be less likely to hear it.
In your grandson's room, is it a hardwood floor or a hardwood?
Yes, it is. It's hardwood. Yeah. And actually, the sound, it's more airborne sound than we're, you know, considering any other type of sound. And the sound travels. It's, you know, there's forced air vents in the entire apartment. And he doesn't always play in one room. You know, he might go to the living room to play. So we're considering doing the entire ceiling of something. And we had heard about a method where you can apply actually another layer of drywall with, I think it's called blue glue or green glue or something.
It's a different density to the drywall, and it absorbs sound more. But what you'd probably want to do is put another space in there. I don't know how tall the ceilings are, but if you can frame down and insulate that also, give another layer and then put that drywall, that would help too.
So insulate it with what? I mean, I've seen it, the different big box stores, you know, materials, which one is called, I think, Sound and Fire or something. I don't know.
Rockwool does
Rockwool.
Really well.
Yeah, that sound and thing is Rockwool. Well. Yeah.
If you use a foam board, you're kind of not really, that's more for temperature, not sound, because it's a hard surface. But the rock wool is more like a fiberglass, and that's going to, like Jim's saying, it kind of absorbs the sound rather than bounce off of it.
Thank you so much for calling, Eloise. I hope that you have luck with this. And you know what? Sometimes it's best to go to a music store like Guitar Center or something and ask what they use, because they're professional musicians, and quite often they run into the same problem.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one quick last question. Have you heard about a product called Quiet Rock?
I have. Yes. I've used that as well.
It's similar to that blue board.
It is. Okay. Yes. Yep. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yep. Thank you.
Lisa. Bye-bye.
The city is alive this morning with so many people from around the world. The Chicago Marathon is tomorrow. Runners from 100 countries have assembled in Chicago, and you will find there are some traffic detours, to say the least, in downtown Chicago. This is House Smarts Radio. Lou Manfredini has the weekend off. I'm Lisa Dent. And in the studio, Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. And if you want a question answered from the experts for free, you know, which it's free advice is always nice, you know, because you can call a place and they'll be like, oh, yeah, we'll get back to you. Yeah. You'll never hear from them again. So 312-981-7200. We do have some questions that came through on the text line from 708. Our wood grain tan colored garage door is chalky. What kind of cleaner can we use to wash the door? Yesterday, we tried Dawn dish soap and a scrub brush. It helped, but it still needs more cleaning. It doesn't look good. Can the door be painted successfully?
It sounds like it's a steel door.
That's what I was going to say. I'm guessing it's a steel door that the paint is kind of losing its shine.
And there's products that you can put over that and then paint. And now I think they even have a product that it's in the paint.
The primer? The primer's
in
the paint.
It's a different type of, it's not like a drywall type primer. It's a different primer. But that paint after a while becomes chalky. It always comes off on your hand and you can easily paint it. Yes.
Yep.
And yeah, do that, because I'm telling you what, I'm building a new home and garage doors won't be here till February.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yes. I'm like, really? Somebody's got to be able to. I thought, well, I'll just go to people in Chicago. Certainly they have garage doors. And they're like, no, it's 12 to 16 weeks.
Thing, though, when they're painting that door, after you're done painting it, open it, close it, and then come back in 3 or 4 minutes, open it and close it, because otherwise you're going to paint it closed.
Yep. So. That's exactly what's going to happen. Okay, let's go to line one. Joe has a furnace question for us this morning. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very good. Quiet here in South Bend. No home game for Notre Dame. But I need a new furnace. They have the single stage and two stage and variable speed, all with very energy efficient, like 96 to 98. Is it worth to spend the extra money to get this variable speed?
Let me start with this. Is your HVAC guy recommending the variable speed?
Well, they offer all three.
They kind of do.
They say, it's quieter.
So here's a little thing. So here's why I ask, because if your house is of a certain size, once you get to a really large home, the challenge of the variable speed furnaces is that, think of like in the middle of the winter in your car, right? So the people in the back seat might not be benefiting from the low heat or the low fan speed in the front of your car, right? And so sometimes in a variable speed furnace, if your house has a large run of ductwork, the areas furthest away will get starved of heat or cooling because it's so far away and the fan speed isn't pushing it enough to get there. So it kind of depends on the house configuration. Does that make sense? That's why I started with, did your HVAC guy look at your house carefully and make sure the variable speed you'll be happy with long term?
Well, there's quite a price difference in them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were saying that it would actually keep it more even throughout the house because you're going to run the fan all the time.
Yeah, and you can run the fan all the time. You can run the fan all the time on a standard furnace as well. I can tell you, the best way I can answer this question is I can tell you I did in my house, which is I did a single-speed fan, and I leave the fan running all the time because I do have an older house with long ductwork. It's not the greatest ductwork, yada, yada, yada. And I need the air movement in the house at those far reach places.
Thank you for calling, Joe. We appreciate it. Have a good day and enjoy the quiet in South Bend.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to line two. Tom is on the phone. Tom has a question about flooring for a condo. How are you, Tom?
Oh, fine. Thanks, guys. Hey, I got a question for you. I'm in Downers and I'm thinking about buying a condo. However, there's a couple of challenges on flooring. First off, I'd want to get someone who could tear out some carpet and put in some laminate on a couple of the rooms. But more of a challenge is that there's a step down that goes from the dining room to the living room. And I'd like to find someone who could also, while they're putting the flooring in, kind of make it more of a slope so you don't get that sharp drop where people could trip. Is that possible?
How much of a rise is it between the floors?
I'd say it's probably about 8 inches, 8 or 9 inches.
Okay, because, I mean, you'd have to have a certain pitch to it. Eight or 9 inches, you're going to have to come out pretty far. That's a traditional step. I think if you're going to try to do a ramp, ramp it down, you're going to have a long ramp, because typically...
I was thinking maybe a 3 or 4 foot slope. Is there a way somebody would know how to put that in when they do flooring?
Well, I'm sure that could be put in...
Is it up to code?
Well, it's going to be a trip hazard too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have a railing on that one side, kind of a thing, it's it's kind of an iffy question, especially if it's a condo, because they're going to have an association, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So you'd need to look into that and see if they would allow it. Downers Grove, I'm not sure how they would be on it, but you could call the building department and ask them, tell them what you have and what you would like to do and see what they say.
Okay, I would say,
I think that's something across the entire length of the room, not like a ramp, but just kind of like a whole, like a slope. So I don't always have to tell people to watch the step, you know, yeah. Something that would...
The other option that you can do when you're doing the floor work, do the bullnose or the tread of that step a different material, different color or something, so that it highlights that there's something different going on. So if you got a light natural stained wood floor, do a little darker stained tread right there.
Can I ask a dumb question, Tom?
Yeah.
Does the ceiling change height as well when you walk from one room to the other?
No, the ceiling is all the same height. It's just there's a step down that goes from the dining to the living room.
Is it an option to just raise the floor in the family room so that there is no step between?
You mean raise the entire floor?
Raise the entire floor, yeah. So it's
frame
all
a new
even
floor in.
So that you don't have to have a slope, you don't have to have a step.
Oh.
Try and figure out. Somebody obviously thought it would be cool to have a drop-down family room, is my guess.
Right.
And now you don't think it's cool, so could you just frame it in and so that the flooring is all on one level?
As long as there's no doors.
Windows, doors, yeah. I mean, there's things that need to be considered.
There's a patio that goes out from that area.
Yeah,
from
that might be an issue.
Yeah, but could you do a step down?
Windows would be too, though.
Yeah, lots of things to think about, yeah. but just trying to think of another option for you.
I think I'd start with the building department.
Any contractors I can call that's real creative on this that maybe could take a look at it for me?
Yeah, Jim.
Ironically, you're talking to Mike Holmes, and the name of his company is Creative Carpentry, and Jim has Tate Enterprises. Oh. They're just very busy, yeah. But, you know, talk to friends, or do you guys have a suggestion?
Yeah, sorry, what's the producer's name? If you can put
Jack?
It on hold, I'll grab the number and I'll reach out to you during the week and at least come out and take a look at it maybe and offer some advice.
Okay, thanks. I'll just hang on then.
Yeah,
okay,
hang on, Tom. We appreciate it. It's House Smarts Radio. Coming up, we're going to talk to a landscaping company about what you need to be doing to prepare for the fall. You know, is it time to mulch your trees? Is it time to trim? All that kind of stuff. I'm Lisa Denon for Lou Manfredini. The experts in the studio today, Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry, Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises, and your calls. You're a part of the show. You are the show. 312-981-7200. It's 8:37. I'm Lisa Dent, in for Lou Manfredini. It's a beautiful morning in Chicago, and landscaping is an issue that we all got to face. I mean, it's so much more fun in the spring when you're planting and you have something to look forward to. Now it's fall and it's cleanup time. And Mike, you're giving me a hard time because you said, why would you mulch your trees? He's a stickler on this business, isn't he, Jim?
Mike is your yard guy.
Well, you mulch around your tree. You don't mulch your tree because then you don't have a tree.
And
it just makes sense.
Yeah, isn't mulch made from the tree?
But I do have to say, why do people use that hideous orange mulch?
I don't like that stuff.
It's terrible.
It's almost red, right?
Yes, it's and it never goes with anybody's house that I've seen.
I don't have an answer for you on that. It's a good question.
Everywhere.
Really?
Man, I wish I got stock in it, but I hate that stuff.
Hey, you want to hit the line so we could talk to, is it Joe and Tommy? I don't know if they're both on the phone. Joe, how are you this morning?
I'm well, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing well. And, you know, I'm new to House Smarts Radio. And so what is the pronunciation of your last name?
Polina.
Joe Polina, how are you today? It's good to talk to you. I do have to say we're broadcasting live from the PermaSeal Foundation Repair Studio. Do you ever ask people about mulching trees? Because I just got busted about, we don't mulch trees, we mulch around them.
Mulch around them and mulch around the plants. And I agree with Mike, you should mulch your trees and your plants, especially before winter, to help out with the freezing and the thawing. And that orange, disgusting mulch is made from recycled pallets that they spray orange, which is awful.
And it gets all over you, too. If you put your hands on it for a while, your hands get orange.
And you know what? Here's the deal, Joe. I like that black mulch, and the last few times I've had it done, they go, oh, that's not cool. You need to go natural.
Right, because all this stuff is all sprayed on and painted. You want to go with a natural mulch, it decays, and it's better for the plant material because then it turns into a fertile soil that helps out the plants.
Okay. How about the cocoa bean? I used to use that all the time, although your house smells like chocolate for a while, but it seemed to work pretty well.
It does work pretty well, but it's very expensive, difficult to find. And I understand, if a memory serves me, that if the dogs get in there start eating that stuff, it's also harmful to them.
Oh, yeah, so I didn't think of that, because dogs shouldn't have chocolate. So good note there. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So this is a busy time of year. I would imagine, obviously, summer's your busiest time, Joe, but come fall, everybody wants the cleanup done, right?
Yes, the cleanup is one of the items that we obviously address in the fall. You know, one thing that everybody should keep an eye on is, you know, your plant material. You cut it back now, you cut it back in the spring. The other thing I always tell my customers, contrary to popular belief, the best time of the year to plant is not in the spring. And this year was a perfect example of that. It is actually the fall. It's also a great time if I'm dealing with a bunch of perennials that are overgrown that need to be split. Time to split those and transplant those. Now that they're going dormant, is the best time to do that. If you're dealing with things like lilacs or fragrant viburnum, now is the time to do, you know, any cutting back. Yeah, you're going to lose the flowers on it for a year, but the fall is a better time to do that. Because what happens is, if you say, oh, I'm going to do it in the spring, and what happens in Chicago? You get a couple 80-degree days, everything starts budding, and then it's like, oh, it's too late. I can't do it anymore. Yeah. So do it in the fall.
I'm kind of bummed that I got to mow my lawn today. I'm like, wait, I thought I was done with that, and now with this heat, it's just going to grow. TommyPolina.com or 847-698-6868. Tommy and Joe are our landscape experts. So I have those big hydrangeas that everybody hates along my front porch. I love them. Now they're all tipped over and they're brown. I have a friend who believes that you leave them up because they add interest when the snow falls on them during the winter. I'm more of the belief of just cut them back down to the ground and let them grow in the spring.
I got to go with your friend on this one, Lisa.
Ah.
It's a trend with perennials has been to leave everything up for the winter, and then come springtime, you cut them back. Now, you probably have what is called as the Annabelle hydrangea, which is a large white flowers.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the Incredible, which is also the same family. But just be careful because some people have the endless summers, and they cut them back in the fall. And then they wonder why they don't have any flowers in the springtime.
Mm.
So you have to be careful what you're cutting back and what you don't.
What can we do about poison ivy? I am covered in poison ivy, Joe. I mean, nobody even wants to landscape because it's such an issue, and it takes a lot of precaution.
Well, I know what you mean. I'm in the area right now. I'm an incorporated Mount Prospect where the back of my property, every year we fight it. And honestly, what we do is we leave it alone until, you know, everything is dormant. And we go there in the winter and we find the root system. We try to dig it up. And then in the springtime, we go back out there. And if I see any remnants, we go ahead and spray it with a non-selective herbicide.
Okay. And so you still have to use the same precaution even when it's dormant, right, if you're pulling up roots?
Yes. Yeah, okay. You should be wearing gloves, long sleeves, you know, everything else. And you know, if you can, you know, throw everything in the wash or throw it away.
Yeah.
Because itches are crazy.
Oh.
I know. I'm pretty sensitive to it. I've had it, and it's not pretty.
Yeah, no. I think I'd need, like, one of those beekeeper costumes to actually even get near it.
I got a hazmat suit.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Yes, exactly. Jack, let's go to line one. Has line one got a landscaping question? It's something about wood. Let's see what they've got to ask about. It's Pat. Pat, how are you today?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You got a question about landscaping, or you got a question for Mike and Jim?
It's for Mike and Jim, I believe. It's concerning kitchen cabinets.
Awesome. Can you hang on, and we'll address that? We're just going to finish up talking to Joe here about landscaping, and then we're going to let him go. So go ahead and hang on, Pat. And so, Joe, what are the other tips for homeowners who are getting ready because winter will be here in the next month or two? And what do we need to do to make sure our yards are in order and taken care of so when spring comes, everything blooms?
Well, besides the shrubbery of any cutting back, obviously we have the obvious lawns, okay? So everybody wants a nice, thick, green lawn. And the way to achieve that is with some fall preparation. Now, we already missed the window as far as seeding is concerned, so don't even bother with that anymore. do that in the spring if you have to. There's never too late to sod. So if your lawn is in really bad shape, don't worry about, the sodding rooting because it will root. The other thing also is if you want to sort of, give it a little kickstart, put on some fall fertilizer, give it, so some root stimulation. Definitely core aerate. I'm a big advocate of core aerating, loosen up the compaction in the soil, letting the oxygen get in there, letting the fertilizer, get down to the root system. And also look at your lawn. Most lawns don't have a thatch problem, but if you have a thatch problem, you might want to do it in the fall. That's like, people call this power raking because, again, there's less chance of crabgrass. In the springtime, you just want to go there. You want to put on step one of your fertilizer with the pre-emergent and let the darn thing grow and then cut it. And then the other thing also, which I must mention, is I see this every year. This year, there's been an outbreak of grub worms, and mostly because a lot of clients that have irrigation systems overwater everything. And I always tell my customers, just because you have an irrigation system doesn't mean you need to water Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It's just twice a week is the best thing to go about it with three-day intervals.
You know what, Joe? I've got a potbelly pig. You can't imagine how many grubs that little creature can absorb in one day, but it results in an overturned lawn. She like roots through that whole thing. Yeah. So TommyBellina.com or 847-698-6868. Thank you so much for joining us today, Joe. I love all your information and especially the stuff about the poison ivy. Thank you. House Smarts Radio, Mike Holmes, Creative Carpentry, Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises in here. We'll get to Pat's call and yours as well. Coming up next. Put his picture in a picture show. Lindsay and Lou definitely have good taste in music as far as I'm concerned.
I always love the music.
Yeah, I love these returns. I'm Lisa Dent. Lou is on vacation this weekend. I think he's got some father-son time scheduled. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry is in the studio and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. And we're broadcasting live from the PermaSeal Foundation Repair Studio. I promised that we would get back to Pat. Pat, thank you so much for hanging on. What was your question for these guys?
Basically, I'm trying to refinish some old kitchen cabinet. My house is about 60 years old, and I'm pretty sure it's the original cabinets. I'm the second owner, but they're really dull, and a couple of them are kind of cloudy on the fronts, and I'm just wondering if there's any advice they can give me on how I should go about doing this.
Yeah, is it a wood finish, like a stain or a paint or what?
I'm thinking of like maybe washing them with soap and water first to get the grease off and stuff, and then
that's a good idea.
Something on there that will bring out the shine again.
So you're not trying to restain them or change the color or anything. You just want to brighten them up again.
Yes. Okay. And then option number two would be to paint them.
Yeah. I think what you're doing is correct. You want to get them washed down real well, soap and water. There's product out there that might be a little bit better to use than just standard soap, but get the grease off it the best you can. Probably wipe it down with some alcohol afterwards to see if you get any more residual off of it, because the grease is going to be very tough to get off if it's around the stove kind of area. And then if the stain looks good, the problem's going to be if you're going to apply a stain, because if you don't get all of the finish off, you're not going to stain evenly. If you're just looking that the color is fine, you just want to put a new clear coat on it, that's a lot easier. Because once you clean them all, you can just apply a clear coat over it.
Okay. Any recommendations or thoughts on what color if I decide to just paint them all?
It depends on what color you like. I mean,
like a solid white.
Yeah, of course. I mean, white is always classic. We do a lot in dark finishes as well, so a lot of graphite, kind of chalkboardy black colors. Doing a kitchen right now with a blue island.
Grays are popular.
Grays are popular. Again, a lot of it really comes down to the color of your countertop, the colors, that you have in your house, just to make sure that you're not clashing with other colors you have going. But white is classic. You can't ever go wrong with white. Yeah.
Good luck, Pat. Thank you so much for calling today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good day. All right, let's see who's on line two here. I think it's Stan. And Stan, you had something you wanted to add to the landscaping conversation?
Yeah, thank you, Lisa, for taking my call today. First off, to Pat, TSP is a great cleaner. Use gloves. You'll get them cabinets really good and degreased.
But he's got to be careful using that if he's leaving the stain, because that can scratch it. So that's why
That's right.
Yeah, if he's going to paint it, TSP is good. If he's going to just apply a clear coat over it, it's a little too abrasive. So,
you know, correct. I had to do the front door, and I went into J.C. Licht in Geneva, and they gave me a stain gel because they said there might already be something on there, and it worked beautifully. That's exterior, but nonetheless.
Yeah, they make gel for inside, too.
You can? Yeah. It seemed to work really well. So what's your landscaping tip, Stan?
Well, something that everybody, dog owners forget all the time. You know, let the dogs go outside, do their business. They never clean it up until, you know, spring or when they get the main thaw. And then they have all the extra burn spots out there. Being a owner of a dog waste company, I encourage people, you know, always be out there all winter long, every time they can, to keep picking up. Because, again, once it hits the ground and it sits there, it's like the compost. It'll keep burning away and keep thawing and freezing and keep just... And you just get major, major burn spots in your lawn. And if you're, like I says, if you're looking after having a good lawn come spring, and again, being an owner of a dog waste company.
All right, I know. You are itching to say the name of your company. Just go ahead. What is it?
All right, thank you. It is Sunny Acres Pet Waste Removal out of Joliet, Illinois. We service all the counties on the West End. So,
you know what? I'll tell you what. I've got a pig and I've got three big dogs, and I use a company called Suburban Scoopers, and they come every Wednesday, and I could not be happier because it's the one thing. I would clean up pig poop every day because it's not as nasty as dog poop, but that is a job I don't want. And I know that sounds elitist, but it's really reasonable.
I'm right there with you. There's some things that I'm happy to pay for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's not in your garbage can. They take it away.
Right.
You know, so I'm with you.
That's right.
All right. All right.
That's right. We take care of everything for you.
Sunny Acres, Stan. Glad you got your plug in today.
There you go. Sunny Acres Pet Waste Removal out of Joliet. Look us up. Google us. We'll get out there and take care of it for you.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. It sounds like he wants to be the new expert on the show. It's House Smarts Radio. The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I'm Lisa Dent in for Lou Manfredini. It's a beautiful day in the city of Chicago, and it looks like we're going to have good weekend weather. It's going to be unseasonably warm for the marathon tomorrow. In fact, you were talking about that, right, Jim?
Yes.
It's a bit of a worry. I mean, if it's 85 degrees and people are running.
And muggy.
Yeah, humid.
It's thick air, right? Muggy means thick air. That's what I get out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is House Smarts Radio, 312-981-7200. Tom, thank you for being gracious and hanging on during the news. You must have a question you really want answered.
Yes, I was just wondering about the air conditioning unit outside. I've heard pros and cons. Do you cover it for the winter or not? Does it make a difference?
I don't cover mine. I mean, the benefit would be, right, you're keeping out pollen and leaves and things like that from getting into it. I feel like the most important thing really is to make sure you have it serviced in the spring before you start using it, you know, consistently. I do see a lot of people cover them. I don't do it in my own house. Do you, Mike? Do you cover yours?
I believe in covering them just to keep the debris out.
Yeah.
And it also a little longevity to the outside shell, you know, rusting and that kind of stuff. For what it takes, I mean, some people it might be a little harder to cover. Yeah. Mine are not. So cover.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. See, if you ask 10 people, you get 5 different answers, right?
Okay. Sometimes 11.
Could I ask you one more quick thing?
Go ahead.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I have Halloween inflatables. They're tall. They're like 7 foot tall. Mm-hmm. And over the years, when you inflate them, they start to, the air starts to come out of them. They don't hold up. Is there, I've tried watching the seams, putting soap on them, see if there's any, but it's really hard to do. I don't know if the air is leaking out of, you know, like where you inflated at. If it is there anything I could put around it to stop it, to seal it, or would you know?
Mike is much more of an expert on Halloween inflatables than
I don't do any Halloween inflatables. Mine are all hard things, but I would say maybe like that flex tape.
Is it possible that maybe the fan that is inflating it isn't as powerful as it used to be?
No, it's not a fan. It's, you know, you have to blow into it.
Yeah,
it's not one
you pump
of,
it
not
up like,
them,
like a beach ball kind of thing. You're saying, right?
Oh, got it. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Sorry.
And you are dedicated to those Halloween decorations. Yeah. I'm not sure I'd have the energy to do that, but God bless you.
I'm not sure how to do that, you know, because depending on what the fabric is and all of that.
Seam sealers.
Yeah.
It's like vinyl, you know.
Pool patch, maybe.
Well, I threw it out there. Maybe somebody in the audience might know.
Good thinking. Someone will call.
Tom, do you hand out the big candy bars?
No, just regular candy, but I've got a lot of, you know, I had these, when you talk about candy, I actually got them from the stores, like Mars Candy. They have their displays, and when I saw it, I go talk to the manager, and I tell him, like, you know, I'm really not nuts, but is there any way that I could, you know, buy that or get one from you? And most of them told me, because I got about four of them, and they says, if you come back after the Halloween season, we'll give it to you. So I got them, and they lasted for a few years, but then they start deflating, and it's a shame. I got Frankenstein, Dracula. I mean, they're really nice, and I hate to just see them sitting in the box upstairs.
Yeah. Well, great to talk to you. I can't wait to drive by your house someday. What town are you in?
Well, I'm in Chicago on the south side. In Deli's Corner. And I got a couple other ones out there anyways, too. So,
Well, we'll know it's your house.
come down 102nd Street.
All right. Have a great day, Tom.
Okay. Thank you.
If you've got a question for our expert panel, Mike Holmes or Jim Sullivan, just give us a buzz. 312-981-7200. This is House Smarts Radio. It's House Smarts Radio. I'm Lisa Dent. Thank you for listening this morning. It's a beautiful day in the city of Chicago, and people are lining up because they want to talk to you guys. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry, Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. Let's go to the phones real quick. Mary is on line four. Mary, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
Doing great. I am drilling these guys for information because I'm selling a house and building a house, and I think they will be worn out by 10 o'clock this morning.
Oh, you know what? To do those two things, you're way braver than I am.
Oh, it's crazy. If I could take it back, I probably would. So what's your question for Jim and Mike?
I live in a house that was built around 1950. It was built on a dirt crawl space. So along the foundation, there are vents. You're supposed to cover the vents up in winter and then take the vents off in summer. Or close them and open them, depending on the season. Mm-hmm. I can't find vent covers anywhere. I've gone to Home Depot. I've gone to Menards. They look at me like I've got two heads. They have no idea what I'm talking about. I have a neighbor who has vent covers, like, built in. He just opens them and closes them.
Yeah, most of them are done that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I asked him, where did you get those? And he has no idea because they were on the house when he bought them.
I would probably go to a big box store and buy. Can you? Is there any room to like put like something a little thicker? Could you get like pink foam board. Insulation board and cut it to fit and put it over them?
You're looking to do something from the outside, correct? You don't want to go into the crawl space.
And we do the insulation.
Yeah.
But honestly, it looks terrible.
Yeah. That's the downside.
And
it's pain
to, you know, take that off and try to get something to stick to that cement. Yeah. You know what I mean? We've tried everything. We've tried magnets. We've tried, you know, two-sided outdoor tape. You know, nothing works. Mm-hmm. If I could just put up actual vent covers and open and close them.
That's a possibility, but they're going to have to be. Somebody would have to do that. It's not just like taking your floor register out of your house and swapping them because they're bolted or actually built into the concrete.
Yeah, it could be poured into the concrete.
I would happily pay someone to do that.
Well, the only thing I could say is go that route or else get a metal cover the right size and screw it onto it and just have to take the screws in and out every year. You know, make like a solid plate and a couple mm-hmm. screw holes into the original vent, and then you just cover it with that. Maybe put some foam insulation on the backside so it seals a little better.
Yeah.
As for somebody replacing them, I'm not sure. Maybe a concrete guy.
Mason.
Yeah.
But you'd have to find them first, which is where the internet is great.
Well, that's what I was hoping you guys could help me with. I've looked on the internet, and it's like nothing like that comes up.
Yeah, all the homes that I've done, I've probably seen that twice in homes, 30-something years.
Well, what would you do, though, if it was...
Well, honestly, I mean, if you want my honest opinion, what I would do is I would call PermaSeal, and I would actually close up your crawl space. The whole idea of having that ventilated is so that you don't have a lot of humidity and, stuff growing down there.
Yeah.
What really most people do these days is they fix that space so that you don't have those moisture issues down there. So, and then they would introduce air from the house down there. So part of the heating and ventilation, so that you don't need to be pulling outside air in because it also makes your house really cold.
So, and that would solve the problem.
That really would be the right way to do it.
They put a membrane down.
You know what?
Yep.
Yeah. They'll put a membrane down on the dirt and seal that all off. And then when you have that air from your furnace going in there and circulating, it keeps it drier and you'll have less bugs because the bugs are coming in through those vents. So.
Yeah. And actually, just so you know, I called PermaSeal. Mm. In fact, I think they've been out here twice and they tell me they can't do it. Because there's not enough clearance. There's,
I was going
like
to say,
the crawl space
access or
small. Yeah.
Just get a little guy to do it. They just got to get a smaller guy to do it.
they didn't offer me that as a solution. They just said they couldn't do it. So,
well, good luck, Mary. I hope some of the information that they've shared with you, maybe one thing might work. But thank you for listening today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, and thank you. I appreciate your time.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Have a great day. Thanks. All right. I'm going to go. Oh, I clicked her too quick. That's why I don't like working the phones. We're going to go to Barry. Good morning, Barry. You got a question for this expert panel in here?
Yes, I do. Hi.
Hi.
I'm looking to redo the floor in my garage. It's a standalone garage separate from the house. It was built about 30 years ago. The floor's got, it's a concrete slab. It's got a lot of cracks and chips and stuff. And I was thinking about putting epoxy on top. Now, I've got two estimates that say they need to repair the concrete cracks and chipping first with concrete and then put the epoxy on. And I've got two other estimates that say, no, the epoxy's stronger than the concrete. We can just grind it all down and put the epoxy right on top without doing concrete repair work with other concrete. So I'm not sure what direction to go in.
Well,
there's a big difference in cost, too. The estimates range from about $2,000 to $8,000. So,
got it. This is where I'm going to – I like Mike's answer on some of this stuff. One contractor prefers to do it one way. Another contractor prefers to do it another way. So I think depending on which contractor you feel most comfortable with, you have to trust what they're offering you and not try and second guess why one would do it one way, one does it another. You have to assume that they're doing it because on their experience, this is what they're most comfortable and what they've done the most with the best results. It doesn't mean they're completely different. It's just that one company likes to do it one way versus another. And that's what I would default to. I've not, in my experience in garages I've done, which isn't a ton, I've never had anybody patch concrete with concrete before they do it. I've always seen them do it with the urethane as they're doing the floor. But that doesn't mean it can't be done with a...
And it also depends on the size of the crack.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah. But I would say the epoxy is correct. It does seal it. I mean, that's what you use when you have a crack. You'll put an epoxy resin in there, and it bonds it tight. It may be a look difference. You might still see the crack, you know, a shadow type thing of the crack, where if they're patching the concrete and grinding it all down, that would not be there. That would be about the only thing I would see different.
Yeah, and then again, depending on the finish.
All the contractors say they would grind it down.
Yeah. You got to grind it smooth.
Yeah,
but if it's a fleck finish, you know, usually they can build that up enough to hide all those kinds of issues. But again, I don't know if that's the finish you're going for.
You know, check their warranty. That's really the thing. If they're warranting the work for a certain period of time and they're all doing that same length of time, then there really isn't a big difference between that I would see.
Nobody will warranty it beyond 1 year.
Well,
they're all of them, 1 year.
Okay, well then, you know, you figure in a year if it cracks, it's cracked, you know, but it could go either way. It could crack again with the guys who are grinding it all down, doing all that extra work because you're trying to take two slabs and hold them together, you know.
Yeah, so. And the other thing we were thinking is the low estimate. We could do four of those jobs.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you might be doing it in a year and a half or 2 years down the road again. Yeah, well, thank you for calling, Barry. More than that, thank you for listening to WGN.
Oh, yeah, sure. I love it. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Okay, one more call here. I think we can get Bill in before the news. Hi, Bill. What's your question for Jim and Mike? Maybe Bill fell asleep on us. Let's see.
There
you go.
Question I have is on a fiberglass entry door.
Yeah.
Has shifted and doesn't fit the frame anymore. It won't close up on top away from the hinge.
Mm-hmm.
Can that door be planed like a wood door, or is the surface not able to be cut down?
No, I would not cut a fiberglass door. You're not really fixing the problem anyway. You're better off taking that door out and resetting it correctly.
Yeah, I was going to say, the problem isn't that your door has changed.
Yeah.
The frame has changed.
Yeah, so you're better off just taking the door out and you correct what needs to be correct and put the door back in.
All right, the other thing somebody suggested was on the hinge side, just to plane that down, deepen the hinges, and then that'll give it more room in the frame.
You know, you're not really fixing a problem, you're just altering the problem.
Okay.
And what happens when it goes a little bit more and eventually the weather stripping doesn't work and everything else is out of whack?
Yeah, plus you can't set the hinges too far in, otherwise the door will hit the hit the frame.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looks like you're getting a new door, Bill.
Yeah, you need a good carpenter is what you need.
Yeah, not a new door. If the door is still in good shape, you can straighten and put it back in. It's just got to come out, be re-straightened, and put back in.
Yeah, you need a good carpenter that creative carpenter. Look at you. Someone that can assess why the frame is shifting and try and make a correction.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
I love that because as homeowners, we always just want to rig it, get it done quick, make sure we get a quick fix. But as professionals, you guys are like, just do it once and do it right.
Sometimes you can get away with it. But when something's moving, if you don't correct that problem, it's going to just happen again and make it worse. And then you can't reuse the door.
It's Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry, Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. I'm Lisa in for Lou. We're broadcasting live from the Permaseal Foundation Repair Studio. I'm Lisa Dent in for Lou Manfredini. The show is winding down. If you want to, I don't even know that we'll get all these questions because these guys love you. It's Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises, Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry. Byron Andreas just walked in with a bagel in his hand and shaking everybody's hand. And I think he's looking for a good deal on remodeling, guys.
Yeah.
He's going to trade you out a little concrete.
Do a little swap. A little concrete for a little carpentry.
Let's talk. That's what
he's
doing.
I would go for the bagel.
we're broadcasting live from the Permaseal Foundation Repair Studio. And let's jump on the phone right here and see who's got a question for us. Good morning. What's your question for Mike and Jim?
Hi, good morning. I have a question about shingles on my roof. We have a two-story home, and we replaced the roof in 2004. and we have shingles that are bulging in one spot behind a vent, but other shingles, well, when you look at the roof, it looks kind of wavy. And we had a, oh, first of all, we don't have any type of overhang or eaves on the roof. And a roofer came out and said that the roof was solid when he walked on it. And my husband looked inside the attic, and there's no leakage. But the roofer said that he thought we would need to replace the roof and add edge vents to the roof. So I'm just wondering about that.
Well, the venting is important. You got to have the attic space vented properly. Edge venting, I'm not sure what he's talking about, because it sounds like you almost have to have gable vents or...
You don't have eaves for soffit ventilation.
Right. So not seeing your roof exact, configuration makes it a little tough, but you want to make sure that the attic is ventilated properly, or you're going to start having your roof deteriorate from the inside out. The waving usually is with the decking material, and it starts to expand and contracting. It'll bow a little bit. The plywood will bend a little bit. But if he says that the roof's solid, the only thing I would be concerned with is the curling of the shingles by the one vent, because that's telling you there's some kind of moisture problem.
Okay, right, yeah, because we do have quite a few vents on our roof, and we also have the gable vents as well.
Okay. Do you have a power vent? Is there any motor?
Yes, we do, but we have not had that turned on.
Okay. The one problem with the gable vents and what they call a mushroom-type vents on the roof is you're only taking the heat out from the very top of the attic. That's why they like doing those eave vents, but you don't have the eaves to do that. So a power vent would help a little, because it's going to at least suck that air through.
Okay. And what if we... would it be worth it to have the edge vents put in because we do not have eaves?
I'm not sure what Jim's got the same look on his face.
I'm sure he's not saying ridge vent.
Maybe, possibly.
Okay. The ridge vent goes along the very peak of your roof, the whole length, continuous vent. So that's ideal, because there's no pockets of air that can sit.
That's what I'm thinking. He's recommending a ridge vent, not an edge vent.
But the problem there is, if she's got the gable vents, you tend to only suck the air right from the closest part of the ridge vent. So there's a whole science to this. it sounds weird, but there's this whole science to it, because hot air rises and goes up. So you want to take the air in from the lower part of your attic space, and it rises up through to the highest point and expels out the roof. So not seeing your whole roof configuration, it's tough. But I would go with what the roofer's recommending, because he's looking at everything there, and roofers know all about the ventilation of attic space.
Thank you so much for calling. We've got to get to Lou's last call, sponsored by ComEd, powering lives. Let's see. We will go to Joanne on line 5. Joanne, what's your question? And by the way, you're Lou's last caller. So what do you
Great.
Need to know?
Thank you. I have a deck that we've had on back of our house, a wooden deck, since like 1990. And we've always treated it. And this last winter, I've had either a raccoon or a skunk or some kind of animal that is eating away or clawing at the bench that is on the deck, and I don't know how to stop it. I've seen the animals on my ring at like 3 a.m, but I don't know how to stop them from clawing or eating the wood. It's wovenized wood, and we've always treated it with Amtico, which is a stain as well as a preservative or a sealer. Any suggestions?
They're probably clawing at it because there's something in there. Either there's insects, or maybe a smaller rodent or something. They're going for the food part of it. What I would try is get some hot sauce.
Okay.
Dilute it with a little water and wipe it on the area where they're going. If it's a raccoon, they get that on their paws. It's going to drive them crazy, and you're going to retrain them to not go there. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, because I did have a guy for my bug control, and they didn't see any bugs, and that's why we were trying to figure out what the heck
you might have
for.
A mouse or a mole or something living in behind it or something.
Well,
that's usually why they come after the board like that.
I love simple solutions. And Joanne, you are Lou's last call. House Smart's radio hat is coming your way, sponsored by Cobblestone Remodeling. Yes, whether you're renovating your kitchen or bathroom, Cobblestone Remodeling's team of award-winning designers can help create your vision. Visit cobblestoneremodeling.com or call 773-661-0606. Thank you so much. If you hang on, Jack is going to get the details so he can put that in the mail to you, okay? And hopefully you'll get rid of the vermin that are living under your deck. That always seems to be an issue. Great to meet you guys. Thank you so much for being a part of the show today. Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry, Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises, and my favorite character, David Hochberg, on Next. You love that guy, right?
Thanks, Lisa. Nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you, too. Lou is back next week.